Okay, good morning, everyone. So today we're going to continue studying the teachings of Rav Shlomo Volbe in the Alei Shur, and we're going to go to one of the introductions of the first section of the first volume of Alei Shur. Our first week we spoke about the cyclical nature of life, that we go through periods when things are going really well and then when we have challenges. And last time we spoke about how Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin teaches us that setbacks are feedback, in the words of Dr. Pelkovitz. So we shouldn't get discouraged when we meet setbacks. So today, Rav Volbe is going to address another aspect of our lives as observant people, as people who are engaged in Torah and thinking about what Torah means to us. And he sets out the following distinction, the following contrast in the first paragraph. You see it says side one and side two. We'll start with side one. Line number one. Berechovos Atuna Tiel Adam. In the streets of Athens, a man wandered. Atzar kol ezrach shepagash v'sha'alo kol echad es osa she'ila. He met every person. He asked them, he stopped them and he asked them the same question. Ketzad lichyos. How to live. That's the question that they asked in Athens. And similarly, in the second paragraph on line four, another man, Adam Acher B'Tkufa Acheres, walked in the middle of the daytime with a torch in his hand, and he says, I'm looking for people. So Rav Volbe on line number seven begins the third paragraph. He says, Ze haya be'atuna. This was in Athens. In Athens, Sham, over there, Shoalu, they asked, Ketzad lichyos, how to live. Visham, and there, Chipsu b'neros, they sought with candles, ben Adam, a person. Birushalayim, but in Yerushalayim, lo hutzruchu lishol, they did not need to ask. Sham yadu ketzad lichyos, there they knew how to live. Visham chayu, and there they lived, b'chol hatkufos b'nei Adam. And there, over all the generations, people lived. So he sets up this distinction between Athens and Jerusalem, which is a well-worn contrast. Now, the truth is that I personally am a little bit hesitant about this contrast, for one. A, because I don't know so much in general, and I certainly don't know very much about Athens, so I'm loath to generalize about Athens and Yerushalayim, so that's one. And the other thing is, in addition to my not knowing, I have also, and now I have gray hair, so I could say that I'm older, but I have also come to appreciate that life is rarely as simple as a distinction as Athens and Jerusalem. It's very rarely just all black and all white, and we have seen plenty of people of Yerushalayim, so to speak, who didn't succeed in living the kind of life that we're talking about. So I put that histaigud out, as in Hebrew they would say, that caveat, so I'm not falling into that trap. But I think what Rav Volbe is trying to allude to is a statement that appears in the Talmud that contrasts Chachma with Torah. Chazal tell us, Chachma bagayim tamin. There is wisdom among the nations. Now, that has a lot of layers of interpretation. But for me, and for many in our community, what that means is that there is a religious value, there is a Torah value in going out and getting a secular education and understanding the wisdom that the secular world has to share. You know, if I, in general, I'm very bad with math, but in theory, if I were the Vilna Gaon, I would be a lot of things. If I was the Vilna Gaon, so then I would learn math through my study of Maseches Sukkah and understand the nature of geometry by the way that the Gemara describes a sukkah is shaped, or learning Seder Zeroyim and figuring out the shape of furrows in a field. It's really amazing. The people who are math people, when they come to those topics in the Gemara, they actually understand what they're reading. But the Vilna Gaon, he understood that from what he was reading. He understood that within the Gemara. But for many of us, we understand that there is a value in understanding Euclidean geometry from a geometry book that wasn't even written by the Vilna Gaon, because Chachma Bagoyim Tamin. There is wisdom out there, and that wisdom is going to play itself out not just in the spheres of math and science, which is very measurable, but many would argue that even in the world of literature, even the world of film, there are nuggets, sparks of wisdom. There is chachma bagoyim. But the Gemara says, Torah bagoyim, that you don't, al tamin, that you don't have. Because the word Torah comes from a very specific Hebrew word. Hopefully we will all merit, those who have the chance to go to Israel, and you hire somebody to take you on a tour or a hike, who do you hire? You hire a Moré Derech. What is a Moré Derech? Someone who guides you along the path. The word Torah comes from the word Moré, or Mora, in a classroom. A Moré Derech is somebody who shows you the right way to walk. It's the right way to go. That's what a teacher is supposed to be. A teacher is supposed to be a Moré. It's supposed to be a guide. So the word Torah is from the Hebrew verb lehoros, to guide. It's not so much to educate. It's more in the word in the realm of guidance and direction. The Torah tells you not a bunch of wisdom, but how to lead your life, how to guide you along your path. I don't remember a lot from my high school years, but I still remember this. And this is a mark of a good speaker. This guy was a very, very good speaker. I still remember he came. We were a bunch of boys sitting in the Beis Medrash. And he gave us a good mushal for how to view Torah and a Torah lifestyle, which for an adolescent boy is something that's important. And it could be useful for other people also. So in those days, this mushal was very apt, because when I was growing up, which was not yesterday, when you would buy something, it would come with an instruction manual. Do you remember those days? When you would buy something, like when I, after my bar mitzvah, I was very excited, I bought a stereo. So the stereo was a Panasonic stereo, and it had a packet of paper, a pamphlet that told you what to do. Today, you don't get any instructions when you buy anything. You just do this. What's that? Right. And if you're stuck, you go on YouTube. You don't get any instructions. But let's go back in our mind to the time when we used to get instruction manuals with the things that we got. Now, not so much. Although today, I still think if you buy an oven, they'll give you. If you buy an oven, they'll give you one. Once you're spending that money, they'll give you. But everything else. A coffee maker, they also give you. All right, that's not a smart coffee maker. If it's a smart coffee maker, they don't give you instructions. So he said, in the days of instructions, he said, you would buy a Panasonic stereo, but you wouldn't know how to operate it. So you would open up the manual to figure out how to operate it. And if you didn't do that, what happened often? Or let's say you were going to Israel for the year and you brought your electronics, but you didn't read the thing where it said, so what do? You stick it in the wall, it goes, and then that's the end of it. That was the end of it, because you shorted it out because you never read what the thing said about the current. I still can't figure that out. But there's a 120 and a 220. I think we're...
There's 220.
We're 120.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Now the shavers have inside. They have a switch. You don't have to worry about that. You just plug it into the wall. But if you don't read the manual, so you won't know which way to go. That was this mushal. I still remember that. He used to say... This fellow said, it's like the difference between going into a supermarket with a blindfold and not knowing whether the bananas that you're buying are green bananas or yellow bananas. So you need to ask the person who's standing there stocking the shelf if you have a blindfold on, which I've never seen anybody do this, but Lu Yitzu, you went into a village marketplace with a blindfold and you said, I need to buy bananas. And they say, well, when do you want them for? That was the first thing they'll ask you. If you want them for breakfast this morning, so you need yellow bananas. If you want them for 4 days from now, you want green bananas. So you have to ask the guy, well, when do you want them for? And then he'll tell you which are the yellow bananas and which are the green bananas. So this is the way of looking at Torah. The Torah is a guide of how to lead a proper, meaningful life. And that is unique to Torah. So how do you live? How do you live? Says Rav Volbi on line 10, Ketzad lichyos. How do you live? So what does it say? He quotes a pasuk, Ushmartem eschu kosai ves mishpatai asher ya'ase osam ha'adam v'chai bohem. By following the prescriptions and the laws of the Torah, that the person will walk in them, v'chai bohem, and he will live in them. Borei hachayim, line 11, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam, when he... As a creator of life, Gam Gila Lanu Ketzad Lemalos Es Hachayim. He taught us how to fill our lives. Dal hu kli chayenu, tzigizant, our bucket, the kli chayenu, the bucket, right, that's our bucket list, kli chayenu, the vessel of our lives, is too small, kedei lahachil es kol hatochen ha'atzum, asher habori nasan lanu, b'chedei lamaloso. Then to capture all of the fill, this is line 12, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to fill it up. Nonetheless, ulam, nonetheless, kol pina, every corner, line 13, becholz beklize, in this bucket, malaya ugdusha, it is full and overflowing, b'machshava dibur umaisa, with thought, speech, and action, ein rega reik b'chai haTorah. There is no empty moment in the life of Torah. Meaning, every interaction that we have, every moment of our lives, we have the opportunity to fill it with something meaningful. Now, that doesn't mean that every opportunity needs to be filled with text-based Torah learning. But the idea that Torah is not a body of knowledge, but rather it is a way of life, so that means that everything that we do in our life has to be filled with Torah. It's guided by Torah. So we can now reflect and realize that everything that's going to happen in our day, right, today is Monday, everything that's going to happen today, Monday, and then throughout the entire week, it's going to ideally reflect, and our aspiration is going to reflect, the way of Hora'ah, the way of the Torah lifestyle. But it doesn't mean that everybody's going to be the same. Everybody's quite the opposite. Everybody's going to be different. Also, when I was in high school, I had a Rebbe. I wasn't so super into learning, but I had one. There was a Rebbe, he wasn't even a classroom Rebbe of mine, but he convinced me that I should come learn with him once a week, and we learned a Sefer, which I learn now with students in the academy, and I continue to be very obsessed with the Sefer. It's called Chovas HaTalmidim. I learned the Sefer when I was in high school, and it's an amazing, amazing Sefer. It's available now in English. It's two different translations. A very, very important Sefer, especially for young people. So now, on Monday mornings I'm here, and Thursday mornings I learn with a group of Academy students during breakfast. So what is the Sefer all about? This Sefer was written by Rav Kolonimus Kalman Shapira, the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, also known as the Piasetzner Rebbe, which is not for today's discussion. We could have a whole other discussion about the Piasetzner. But the reason I became hooked on the Piasetzner is because in his introduction, he says, you know, you kids, it's a book written for students. He says, you kids think that we, your teachers, are trying to make you into old men. That's probably what kids think. We're not trying to make you into old men, he says. He says, we want you to play ball with your friends. Right when he wrote that, I said, this is my Rebbe. Anybody who says that it's good for kids to play ball, I'm set. He says, we're not trying to make you into old men. We're not trying to take away your life from you. He says, we just are trying to show you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part of your life in every aspect and everything that you do. And so that when you play ball as an emissary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Obviously, that totally transforms the way that you play ball. And the same thing in all aspects of our life. And I wonder if that's what Rav Volpe is getting at here, which is every corner of our life, there is an opportunity. Ein rega reik b'chai haTorah. We know this from all experiences across the board in our life. We don't have so many bridges in Chicago. We have the Skyway. I don't know what else we have. We don't have so many mountains, and we don't have so many rivers, so we don't have so many bridges. But Nachum and I used to live in Washington Heights in New York, and we would spend a lot of time driving over the George Washington Bridge. She went to school in Newark, and then so she would drive every day, and then when we moved to Fairlawn, I was driving into YU every day, so the George Washington Bridge played a huge role in our life. And part of the challenge of living in that, whether you're living in Washington Heights or in Bergen County, is navigating the bridge traffic. Some of you have actually seen this experience. You've driven over the George Washington Bridge. The approach to the George Washington Bridge from the New Jersey side, it's like 78 lanes wide. And the bridge has an upper deck and a lower deck, but it's only like four lanes in each way or something like that. So you're getting, you know, 5,000 cars to squeeze into a tiny, narrow, salami-sized bridge. It's a big adventure. So there are different ways, there are a bit different ways that people cross the bridge. You have the people who are cutting off and cursing and flipping you off and like the craziest drivers. You see it. And you're just like, What kind of a person are you, man? Relax! Relax! You know, you can't live like that. But if you take a person who is a person of Torah, who really has suffused Torah in their whole personality, you know, you take a ride with someone like that, when they cross the George Washington Bridge, it's a totally different experience. Most of the time, those people, not like me, usually leave on time when they're going to have no problem with the traffic. They leave adequate amount of time, so they're not like hyperventilating, crushing the steering wheel in their fingers. But aside from that, they have a certain amount of derech eretz. You know, they drive with a certain amount of respect and courtesy to the other people who are... We're all merging the same 100 lanes into 5 lanes. We're all going through the same life. The question is just, how do you treat that other person? You know, a person who fully embraces Chai Torah, so obviously they're not self-absorbed. So you have this sometimes in Jewel. You ever have this when you're walking around, you know, you're just peacefully doing your Jewel shopping, and somebody comes around the corner, and they're like, out of control, totally out of control. It could be me. I'm not saying who it is. But you're just like, I think that person needs to get a grip. You know, I think that person needs to get a hold of their life. They're not living their life in a way that is, you know, meaningful and peaceful. It doesn't mean that living a Torah life means that it's like always Zen all the time. Quite the opposite. Even on a religious level, we have a lot of turmoil, and we have a lot of doubt, and we have a lot of suffix, and we have a lot of challenges. But the kind of life that we want to lead, we need to take a step back. And part of what learning, says Rav Volbi, is about, is learning Torah Chaim, of how to lead your life. And so what he says is, that doesn't just mean I got to figure out, well, how much time am I going to devote to Daven Shacharis tomorrow? Well, usually I devote 12 minutes. Is it enough time to Daven Shacharis in 12 minutes? Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. Let me think about it. But it's more than that. It's that the Torah tells you how to lead your life in general. So it means, how much time do I devote for calling somebody, a person who probably needs a pick-me-up? Reaching out to somebody who maybe they can't get to the store today, so I could pick up something for them. So now, my whole trip to the grocery store is transformed into a world of meaning rather than into a world of, you know, fighting people in the parking lot, because I want to get out first, because I want to get to the quickest, you know, the next thing on my life. So we can view every aspect of our life as a way to fulfill the Torah Chaim that we're living. So where do we draw the inspiration for this from? So Rav Volbi makes a suggestion. I'm a very big fan of this suggestion. He says on line 14, "Ve'ein tzarich lechapes adam haTorah ba'avukos." You don't have to search for a person of Torah with a torch. He says, look, line 14, halfway down, "Mimoshe Rabbeinu ad achron hanaviim," from Moshe until the latest of the prophets, "Me'ezra hasofer v'ad Shimon HaTzadik," from Ezra until Shimon HaTzadik, "ad Rabbeinu HaKadosh to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, ad Abaye v'Rava," the great sages of the Talmud, until Rabosenu, line 16, "Harambam v'Haramban, Maimonides and Nachmanides, Hava'ad HaMachaber," the author of the Shulchan Aruch, "V'Hagra," the Vilna Gaon, "Chafetz Chaim, Chazon Ish, Toras HaAdam, Gidla es ha'adam hasholim b'chol dor v'dor." The Torah of the person, the whole person, it raised up the person in every generation. There are people in every generation who really do exemplify what whole person Torah is. Whole person Torah. Not just learning Torah, but whole person Torah. Living Torah. These people are a living Torah. So he gives you some names. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who authored, who edited the Mishnayos, and the sages of the Talmud, and the Chazon Ish, Rabbi Avram Yeshaya Karelitz of Bnei Brak, and the Chafetz Chaim of Radin. So this is one model. You want to look for living Torahs? Find models. Find role models. And this is really important. It resonates very much with me. And I think there are two layers of role models we can talk about. We need to have, says Rav Volbi, we need to have religious Torah role models. The first layer are maybe the most direct concentric circle of role models in our lives. Those are the people that we connect to, that we reach. There's an expression, "Masai yagiu masai lamasai avosai." When will my actions touch Yagia means to touch, lahagia means to reach, the actions of my forebearers. So some darshanim used to say, it doesn't mean that I'm going to match my forebearers. It means I'm going to reach their feet. So many of us have either parents or grandparents or siblings or people in their lives who they met who are unbelievable role models in living Torah aspects. You know, I had a grandfather, my mother's father. The man was a minyan addict. My grandmother could not plan any trips or any, you know, our early bird dinner at Sarah's, Olive Shalom, on 125th Street in Miami when we used to visit them. That was all planned around when Mincha Maariv was. And if we would come back late, this was a man who was twice my height and twice my weight with a four-pronged cane who almost broke my fingers running down the hall so we wouldn't be late for Mincha Maariv. So that was the living embodiment. And I guess if we went around, everybody here would have somebody who they met who inspired them in some way. And that's important. We need to have that for ourselves and for our children, our grandchildren. But I think there's another level that maybe we don't often think about, which is we need to think about appreciating people who are even on a greater level, on a global level, the people that Rav Volbe is talking about. There was a man, his name was Rav Shlomo Freifeld. Rav Shlomo Freifeld was the head of a yeshiva called Sha'ar Yashuv. Sha'ar Yashuv was the yeshiva, maybe it's well known because Bob Dylan made an appearance at Sha'ar Yashuv for a period of time. Sha'ar Yashuv is like a very, now it's still a very popular yeshiva. At the time, in the 60s and 70s, it was a Baal Tshuva yeshiva, and people came from all over, and Rav Shlomo Freifeld knew how to relate, in Far Rockaway, how to relate to each of these bachrim from all kinds of very, very, very difficult, sometimes, backgrounds. All amazing, amazing person. So Rav Freifeld, in his book, he has a book that after he died, they put together a beautiful book of inspirational stories in his life, Rav Shlomo Freifeld. So apparently he used to tell his students, he says, you know, we have to always be on the lookout for big people. So he was a student of Rav Yitzchak Huttner, who was the great Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. He said, Rav Huttner is a big person. So you have to watch him, you have to keep an eye out for him. So we have to, in our community, we have to start raising the idea, says Rav Volbe, of looking out for big people. We should do that. We should figure out who are our role models, the big-time role models. Sometimes we can ask ourselves, and I'm not going to ask for volunteers to not put anybody on the spot, but if there was one Jewish person, one giant, in the last 1,000 years that you would want to meet, who would it be? So part of the question is, you have to think about who is on your list, who do you know who you would want to meet, and then you should figure out why you would want to meet them. There was an article that was written not too long ago by a teenage boy, a couple weeks ago, in a blog. I don't usually read blogs, but someone sent this to me, and it's a very powerful article. It's got a kid by the name of Eitan Gross. I don't know where he lives. He's probably somewhere on the East Coast somewhere. And he wrote a blog about the challenges of our community, in his view, the view of a teenager. And one of the salient points he makes in the article is that, wait a second, how is it possible that kids in our community know the names of, I don't remember the names of the people that he mentioned, Kanye West and fill in the blanks of various people, but they don't know the names of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein and, you know, the Stipler Gaon? Like, that's an important reflection. I think that it is, and this is not a credit to me, but maybe it's part of my mishigas. I think it is the best thing in the world. I'm so excited about this. B'li Ayinara, B'li Ayinara, that our kids are getting, for a whole slew of reasons that they earned, to get a PS4. But the joke in the house was that the PS4 was the P.S. Etzner. That was like Friday night, Ilan figured that out at the table. I'm like, oh, that's a great joke. I like that. Because if your frame of reference, that means that I'm talking about the P.S. Etzner so much that your frame of reference from the PS4 is the P.S. Etzner. That's good. The PS4 is another story. The value of that we can debate a different time. But that's an important thing that we really need to work on. And when I read this article, I'm like, you know what? I really need to work on that. We need to work on that for ourselves and, of course, for our kids, but really for ourselves. How many people can we point to and say, wow, I know that big person. I can look up to that person as a role model. So we need to do that. Most of those people, many of them, are not living. So in my opinion, getting books and reading them is a great way to start. It's a window into people. It's not saying that we're building some kind of like pantheon of people who are infallible and they never make mistakes. Quite the contrary. Everybody makes mistakes. And if you make people out to be people who never make mistakes and they were geniuses from the time they were 2 years old, so Rav Huttner himself writes in a letter, he says, you're doing them and you a disservice. Because you say, I have no shaykhs with them. What do I have to do with them? They're some genius and they're very pious. From the time they were, 4 years old, they were changing the next kid's diaper and they were learning all of Shas at night by a candlelight, even though the Cossacks were beating down the door, like stories like that. That's not going to help you. But you read stories about Rabbi Aryeh Levin, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. Yeah. If you haven't read that book, A Tzaddik in Our Time, you have to get that book. You must read that book. It's an amazing book about, he was a regular person, he was a very down-to-earth person, A Tzaddik in Our Time, amazing book. So what that meant when he saw an orphan kid in the street and how he related to them and how he would carry them to give him a little, like a piggyback ride to shul because the child didn't have a father to take the kid to shul. So with the idea that Revolbi is focusing on and that we are taking away from this morning is the idea that the Torah is a living Torah and that it's a whole person Torah. It's not just something that's academic. It's not just relates to the way we learn. It relates to the way that we live. And every aspect of how we live is going to be informed by the Torah, by the guide, that is the Dvar Hashem. And one way to start thinking about how to have that guide in your life is to look to role models. It's to look to the immediate role models that we see in our lives, people who inspire us, people in the community. There are people in this room, women here are big-time Nashim Tzidkanios. I wouldn't dare start to embarrass them, and it would take away their status as Lamed Vav Tzidkanios. But there are a lot of inspirational things that are going on in this community, and we can look to that. But we also need to start thinking about, who are those big people? Who are the people that we can look to and tell ourselves, wow, that's a great aspect that I can identify with. And even if I can't read it, even if I can't reach it, asking the question of when can I be like that person. Doesn't mean those people are infallible. The Gemara is full of stories about how, Chazal discussed even Avraham Avinu wasn't perfect, and Yitzchak Avinu wasn't perfect, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't perfect. If you ever get upset at somebody, don't feel bad. Moshe Rabbeinu also got upset at somebody a few times, and the Torah doesn't mince words. And the Chazal say, look what happened, you got angry at somebody, so that's not a good thing. But the idea of looking at these role models in our lives can help us to see for ourselves what it means to find Ketzad Lichyos, how to live, and to find that Adam HaShalem. Yeah. Yeah, of course, come on.
As adults,
yeah.
And I feel like I'm definitely the youngest one here.
But now you're an adult and you're about to be
a mom.
A mom.
No, I have lots of questions, different questions. So as adults, take a role model, find a role model in the community and try to emulate that.
Right.
But then when you're a teenager, when you're in high school, you don't get that from your teachers. The first thing you're told is, okay, learn the details of this program. Learn the details of, and then, so I'll even take it back to first grade, right? First grade, you're taught not even the details of what this person did that was bad, and so they're normal, they're people. They're put on a pedestal, right? So Moshe is put on a pedestal. Rivka is put on a pedestal. Everybody's put on a pedestal. And then when you get into high school, it's less about even the people, and it's more about the details of the Torah, the laws of the Torah. And you never really hear that role model part. You're saying how, why don't kids know who all these rabbis are? Well, when I'm in class and a teacher's rattling off 15 rabbis, I'm not paying attention. So I guess the question I'm asking or just the comment I'm saying is, as adults, it's easy to see that. But as kids, how do you portray that? I don't think that it's necessarily... I think that the way the education system works isn't necessarily showing that.
Okay,
so there's a big lack.
Yeah, let me break down what Flora is saying maybe into a couple of pieces here, and you'll tell me if I'm getting it correctly. One is that when you talk about role models in general, if you're talking about real life role models who struggle, who aren't perfect, so that's very difficult for children. Right? How do we educate children? Because kids think so much in binary, good or bad. Is the good guy or the bad guy? So, usually in the Disney movies, there's the good guy, right? There's the good lion, and then there's the nasty lion with the bad music, the sinister music in the background. And it's difficult to explain to children complexity. So that's one challenged, right? In general, when you're trying to educate about role models, now today we can learn, we can understand that you're not necessarily going to write this person off from your life because they made a mistake. But for kids, that's a harder, you know, that's a harder thing to teach, right? That's one issue. The second issue that Flora is identifying is the question of commitment, right? Training our kids, habituating our kids to do certain things without giving them the why, which is a second piece of the puzzle, because here again, you have an age-appropriate question. You know, my son just turned 13. He's bar mitzvah now. So, you know, I don't know anything about parenting. I'm working by the seat of my pants here. So thank God I have Nechama. She's got the parenting thing down, so I follow what she says. But so how do you train a 13-year-old about davening? Well, you could sit them down and talk to them about the meaning of davening and the power of davening, but if that doesn't speak to them, so how do you get them in the habit of davening so that when it does hit them, they'll have that misgeret? So there also you have a second challenge. And then the third issue that you're identifying is, well, okay, now we're talking about kids that are a little bit older who can handle complex role models, they can handle deeper discussions, but when we have a huge amount of material that we need to cover, you know, so how do we balance the info with the, you know, the feeling and the experience?
So much of like high school is focused on getting through the material you're supposed to get through, and it's not focused on finding that person, the role model, and who they can then relate to and say, okay, now I get it. Now it's clicking.
Yeah, so that's something that the Pia Setzner actually identifies in his letter to parents. In the introduction to the Chovas HaTalmidim, he has a letter to parents. And one of the things that he talks about there is this issue. And the way that I broke it down for the students a couple of weeks ago when we shared that on Thursday morning was that, you know, there are two components to what you're trying to accomplish. There's the information and then there's the inspiration. The Pia Setzner writes, he says, if you only focus on the information, so then you're not going to succeed in raising up that the child should develop and really embrace Yiddishkeit. So that is a long-standing challenge. That if we tell somebody that Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach had this pot, you know, he paskin this and this particular halacha, but you don't understand who that is and what that man represents. One of my favorite stories about Reb Shlomo Zalman, there was a family that came to him and they were very broken because their son had very special needs, had very serious special needs, and he needed to go to a particular home. And Reb Shlomo Zalman was the Gadol Hador. He was mourned by people across the religious spectrum, but he was also extremely humble. One of my favorite pictures of Shlomo Zalman was that there's someone who took a video of him and they put it in a book, the picture. He was making this obscenely grotesque face because he was being introduced at a dais, at a speech, by someone who was heaping praise on him. And he was so uncomfortable, he was like making this grotesque face. But his famous picture is of him smiling. And I still remember one day, we used to have a picture of Shlomo Zalman in our dining room, and one day Nechama came home from dental school and she said to me, you know, Shlomo Zalman had dentures. I'm like, how do you know that? She said, I'm telling you. And then when I found out a good story from Dr. Abraham, Hitaka did have dentures. Anyway, so this family came to Shlomo Zalman and they said, we have this son and he has very serious disabilities and he needs to go live in this place. That's what we have to do. But he refuses to go. So this boy was a religious boy and they brought him to Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman sat with him in a little room in his apartment in Shari Ches, and he said to the young man, he says, do you know who I am? And the boy says, of course I know who you are. He says, who am I? He said, you're of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, said this developmentally challenged boy. And Shlomo Zalman said to him, do you know that I am the most important rabbi in all of Israel today? And that people call me from all over the world with questions? And the kid says, yes. You know, his eyes light up. He says, yes. So Shlomo Zalman says to him, he says, I have a job. There is a place in the north, I'll tell you exactly where it is, where they need a mashkiach. They need someone to go and supervise the kitchen. But that person has to live there and has to supervise the kitchen very closely. And they have to check every day to make sure that all the products that come in the kitchen are kosher and all of the food that comes out of that kitchen is kosher. And I heard that you are a very scrupulous young man and that you could be my mashkiach in this place. And the kid's eyes go like this. So Shlomo Zalman says to the parents, he says, do you think you could let your son go to live in this place so that he could be the Mashgiach? So if you understand that that's where Shlomo Zalman Orbach was, and that was how he understood people, and that was how he cared about people, so then his Torah takes on a whole another level of meaning. So what you're pointing out is that we need to do a better job in our educational system, Bechlal, but each of us in an individual level, of not just focusing on what we're doing, but why we're doing it, not just in the sense of why we're doing it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to us, but why we're doing it because it fits into a much broader context. The reason why I listened to Pesach from Shlomo Zalman is, of course, because he was the God of Ador, and he knew more Torah than anybody else, and he had tremendous insight, but also because he was this kind of person. He was an Adam of Torah. And that's something that we need to try to focus on. And it's a balance, because there's so much to learn, but I do think that that's something that can definitely be reinforced. You know, the idea of getting to understand the people behind it. You know, many students, when they walk into a classroom, and we're way over time now, many students, when they walk into a classroom and you give them 15 sources, they couldn't tell you the difference between Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Moshe Isserles. Because what's the difference? They're just rabbis. But if you understood, now maybe this is because I have a bias, I'm interested in history, but if I understood that Rav Moshe Isserles lived in the 16th century in Krakow and who the kinds of people he was dealing with, and Rav Moshe Feinstein lived on the Lower East Side and he died in the 1980s, and he had these and this questions and this, you know, I think it gives you a much better picture to feel connected to the halacha, not just, well, it says this and you check this box and you check that box. So it's a lifetime of work. That's going to be the next challenge we have as a community. I think we're up for the challenge, though. I wouldn't despair just yet.
Not running away, don't worry.
Okay, good. All right, which one? Rabbi Ari Levin?
No.
Which one?
For the kids. Rabbi Chaim Kalman.